So this is October 1st, 2018. This is our first TMFG podcast, call it Random Thoughts by Rob and Mike. I'd like to revisit that question about, a number of clients have questioned me as to why I've sold a stock before the dividend gets paid out. Have you got any thoughts on that, Mike?
A couple of years ago, or probably many years ago, we were at a DFA seminar, and they brought one of the speakers there and talking about going back to the old Graham and Dodd, I believe it was that book on finance, or it was the father of all finance. And they got a Nobel Prize, and it was based on the idea that dividends is really like taking money from one pocket and put it into the other pocket. And again, it was just a different way to think of dividends, because people keep on thinking it's making money, but it's really a movement.
So let's say it's month end, it's September 30th, and the stock is worth $10 and it's gonna do a 50 cent dividend. No matter what, on September 30th, you've got $10. On Monday, October 1st, if you haven't spent anything and nothing's changed, you have $9.50 plus a 50 cent dividend. Is that right?
Yeah, so think of it as if you have $10 in your left pocket, and it's in, you have change and dollar bills, but they have to be $10, and you take 50 cents and you take it out of your right pocket and you put it over to your left pocket. So now in your right pocket, you have $9.50, but in your left pocket, you have the other 50 cents. So in total, you still have $10 on you. It's distributed differently now. One of it's in your right pocket and bills and a few coins, and there's two quarters in your left pocket, but you still essentially have the same amount of money.
Do you think anyone would actually, do you think stock prices go up before the dividend and then go down after the dividend?
There'll be movement up anticipating the dividend being paid out. Sometimes that does happen, but it is immediately corrected as soon as the dividend gets paid out, because the stock right before the dividend, they know that dividend's in there, so it's then built into the price of the stock. So there will be a movement in price up until that dividend's paid, but that knows it's really a time value of money because you know that dividend is expected. So you can see some of that, but there's really no difference in selling it before or after, because if you sell it before at the higher price, you know, after the price is going to drop, but you're going to have the dividend also. So really there's no difference in when it sells. The one thing you can find is, if you want to get really technical on it, there may be a difference in taxation. If you sell it beforehand, you may take it as a capital gain. If you sell it afterwards, you'll have less of capital gain and more of the income as a dividend income. And in Canada right now, it's probably more favorable to have the capital gain income rather than the dividend income.
But that's right, because it's only taxed at half. Okay. One other thing, got the morning paper today and looked and saw that we now have a new U.S.-Mexico-Canada free trade agreement. They're no longer going to call it NAFTA. There's been a lot of discussion with clients in the last month or so about that. What are your thoughts?
It took a long time to get what we sort of expected. We have some dispute resolution put into the agreement, which is good for Canada, I find. We had to give up some of the dairy. I expected that anyway. I think that was a given that we had to give up a little bit of the dairy advantage we have. It gives U.S. farmers more access to Canada. But in essence, I think it's a good deal for both sides. We have Mexico, U.S. In the world today, we're getting larger conglomerates of companies get working together, which is a good thing for the world economy. We've seen it happen in Europe, and we see between North America. So if we're going to compete with Europe, we're going to need to act as one, and especially with Asia and China coming out, it's very hard to compete with them if you're not unilaterally hooked up.
The thing I find interesting, if we looked at just new assets coming in the month, you see a drop. It was down a little bit from a previous year. And I often find that it's events going on in the market that cause people to pause and hesitate on investing their money. And, you know, so there was some uncertainty in the market about this free trade agreement, whether it was going to go through. And the minute the uncertainty disappears and we've got certainty, we've got an agreement now, investors are more comfortable. The problem is the market moves so fast that the market's already gone up, starting with today.
Yeah. It's funny how the importance of events seems to be directly related to the minutes between now and when it occurs more than how important it is. We look on some of the events in the past that seemed really important at the time, don't seem like much right now. It's funny, but at the time, they were so severe and so important. We always clients saying the same thing, I want to wait because of this huge event coming on. And we look backwards on the event, it was just a little blip along the way.
So by year end, we're going to look and we won't even remember that we had this worrying and waiting about this free trade agreement when we look at the year end numbers.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we go back, Brexit was a devastating situation, right? And that was, a year and a half, 2 years ago, and that was almost world changing. And, Europe it doesn't fail to exist anymore. There's still business over there. I was over in Ireland this year, and everything seemed to be going pretty well in Europe. So again, it's the news. The media loves to go and make this stuff as important. That's how they get you to watch the commercials. I've been watching commercials for the last 2 weeks on this free trade thing, so hey, it works.
Yeah, I guess it does. We discussed earlier that maybe we should talk about a couple of the different patterns that we've seen with clients around retirement and retirement age. And you mentioned to me that you had a client that you thought may have retired a little too early. And you want to expand upon that?
Yeah, well, we both find we really work on financial plans and we want people to enjoy their money and enjoy their retirement. But some people who do very well early on tend to go and jump the gun on retirement. A lot of it comes because of a job loss. And they'll be in a situation where they're an executive in a company making very decent amounts of money. They'll be in their early 50s to mid 50s, and they get let go. Particularly in the technical industry, it's a bit hard to find work as someone in their mid 50s in the technical industry. And instead of going back to work, what they decide to do is they say, oh, that's it, I'm gonna just take it easy and retire. The problem is they haven't adjusted their expenses. They haven't adjusted the lifestyle, and it's very difficult to make a retirement work over a 35 or 40 year period. There's a lot of unknowns. You know, if you have an 80 year old in here, you can pretty much guess the inflation rate within a reasonable level of the next 10 years or so. You can guess what upcoming expenses they're gonna have, and they're gonna have lots of money left over. When you start doing that with someone in their 50s, there's a lot of unknowns in there. Return rates, there's a lot of unknowns around interest rates, where they're gonna be, what inflation's gonna be at. With all those unknowns, it gets to be a very dangerous game.
I think, you know, it's interesting you point that out, because the problem is they're still in their spending years. They still are active and wanna be active and travel and do all the things they were doing when they're working. But they have such a possible long life that they need a lot of equities in their portfolio. They need to be 70-80% in equities in order to keep ahead of inflation. Because if they go down to 50 or 60% in equities, that only means 50 or 60% of the portfolio is gonna be able to keep up with the cost of goods.
Yeah.
And things keep getting more expensive. Nothing's getting cheaper.
Yeah. I had two clients in last week, they're in their 90s. You know, it happens. People don't expect to live that long, but trust me, when they do, they don't want to die either. And so you got to make sure you plan for that.
Well, you even mentioned to me about your dad. What did your dad who just turned 90, what did he say to you the other day?
Yeah, he said he leaned over to me and said, how long do you think I'm going to live? I said, I'm not too sure. He said, I think I'm going to make 100. So he's good for him. But you got to make sure the finances are out there to do it, you know, and people that retire in their 50s, unless you have a very, very substantial financial position, it's very difficult to do with safety.
Yeah, yeah. And I think the especially those that had the high income that were making, you know, north of 150,000, 200, 250,000, having to drop down to $60,000 after taxes is really hard to do.
You know, they say they're going to do it, and they pull into the parking lot of their BMW. It just doesn't line up. You know, it's one of those things. You get used to a certain level of spending, and when you get there, it's very hard to back off. And the question is, do you really want to?
No, for sure. One of the other ideas that I thought we should discuss today, and you know, you and I have been at this for a long time, and we've seen all kinds of stories and strategies, is we've had a number of clients that have been really successful, and we've sort of held them out in their late 30s and early 40s as you know, your plan is 100% on track, you're doing a great job saving, and then suddenly the saving stops. And it's not because of a job loss or anything, but they just stop saving. Why do you think that's happening?
It's a tough question. I have a really hard time figuring out, but we both have seen the same thing. So it's obviously becomes an issue. And these people, as you said, I look through, we keep track of what everyone saves every year. And I look through all from last 20 years, and for a period of time, they used to save, even when they weren't making much, they were still saving 20 to 25% of their income every year. And all of a sudden, I look at a spree, they're in their 40s and they haven't done an RSP contribution in 6 years, which is just silly. It's absurd. But the most that I think of it is they work very hard and they finally get it. They just decide to, they're in an okay position or might be better than their friends, and they just go and give up on it. But it's a very rough, it's a tough idea. You have to save during those, you have those high income earning years. You know, you spend your life trying to create a career, and your career really doesn't start till your mid-30s when you start to get rewards for everything you've done. And then you have some really decent earning years. Between 45 and 55 or 60, those are key years. You're getting your mortgage paid off, your kids are becoming a little bit less expensive, they may be going to university, you may have pre-saved for those, and you gotta really go and take that money and use it to take care of the rest of your life. I don't know what happens with people.
Yeah, it is strange. I can probably name 10 clients where that thing has happened. And the hard part is getting them back on track again. Some of them have even started to take money out from their open account and things like that. And to get them saving again, and at the same time, then they start to get a little more conservative. It's a difficult thing. And it's strange because you remember them as that very successful client who had everything working, and suddenly they're one of your most least successful clients.
Yeah, it's tough. Remember you told me once, it's difficult when you go up one star level in a hotel, it's hard to go backwards. You know, if you're at 3-star and you go to 4-star, you don't want everyone to be a 3-star again. And I guess these people, what happened, they get a taste of a little bit of better living.
Of the four star,
and they don't want to go back to a little bit of 3-star to save again. That's the best example I can think of.
Yeah, it's like that with restaurants, right? Like once you start going to some better restaurants, it's tough adjusting and going to have dinner at Swiss Chalet.
Yeah,
for sure. Well, you know, I think that's a pretty good start for our first podcast. We still got to give it a name and a title, and we'll work on that. And hopefully the next time we get to chat, we'll have some new things and some new areas that we can discuss.
Excellent.
Thanks.
Thank you.